Hi, Mom.
Good evening.
Hello.
How are you?
Well, pretty good.
Good. Okay, I'm gonna go on mute.
Good.
Good evening.
Hello.
How are you?
Okay.
Good evening.
I think I may not be able to stay on because Tony's cousin is coming in just a minute. So, but I did want you to know. But right now I'm going to mute and go tell Tony to come and tell me when she comes in. She's
Understand.
buying the house next door, and I think that's what it's all about. So I'm going to mute right now and then I'll come back.
Okay. Comaster, I know you're muted. We're going to wait till Hannah comes back or someone else comes on.
Okay, that's no problem.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, we'll begin.
Okay, I'm not sure how long I'll be able to stay on, but
Understood. Just let me know when you're leaving.
all right.
L'shem Yichud Kudsha Baruch Hu Ishkin Tevid Hilur Himud Hilud Hilur Himud V'yakta L'shem Yud Hei B'Vav Hei B'Yichud Ashelim B'Shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah V'yihi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Alei Nemaaseh Yadeinu Kenanei Alei Nemaaseh Yadeinu Kenaneihu. Verse 380 in section 64 in the Bereshit Bet of the Sulam commentary. Kadata Enosh Chama Alon V'chama Hachmat Chom Mishanyan Ilayin V'ishtadlu V'chon V'yavdin Avid Tin V'charshin V'kosmin V'yolifu Minchon Ad V'yipashtat Ahiyo Hachmata V'dara D'mabul V'kol Ho Hawo Avdei Avitaihu Le'avasha. But when Enosh came, he saw those fig leaves, that their wisdom contradicts the holy beings. That is, it denies holiness. Then people once again practiced magic and sorcery, and they shared their knowledge with others. This wisdom spread widely in the generation of the flood, when magic and sorcery were practiced for evil purposes. Questions, thoughts, comments?
Well, I think it's clear as red, especially since, although it's a repeat of what the previous verses of last week were, which is a point in itself.
Well, it's saying again that the fig leaves represents witchcraft.
Right.
Why is it a fig?
But here it's expanding witchcraft to also be including magic and sorcery. And it's also indicating that magic and sorcery can be practiced for positive reasons as well as evil reasons. although it doesn't say that, it hints to it.
Where is that hint? I don't see it.
In the last line, when it says, when magic and sorcery were practiced for evil purposes. If it didn't need to say evil purposes if it was only evil. But
okay.
It could have said, when magic and sorcery were practiced, period, if it was only for evil. But the fact that it says for evil purposes, those additional words tell you that it can be practiced for a positive reason.
Hello?
Yes, Call Master.
What is the difference between the two? Well, actually, I think you said three, but magic, sorcery, and I think there was something else. But what are the differences?
Witchcraft.
Yes, I'm sorry.
There's a lot of discussion, and it's really not clear what the differences are. But essentially, the spiritual system controls the physical world. That we all can understand. So utilizing the spiritual system to make changes in the physical world and the physical aspects of life and things and manipulation, all of that is one system, but it can be used for selfish purposes, or it can be used for sharing purposes. The definition of positive is sharing, and the definition of negative is selfish, one for oneself alone. So all of these different aspects are tools capable of manipulating the spiritual system. But in our generation, that knowledge is, if it's still available, is very much concealed. And yes, it is available, but it's very much concealed. It's not taught. Where would it be taught? It would be taught in the classes of the Sefer Yetzirah, because that's teaching you how to utilize the letters to impact the spiritual system and make changes in the physical systems. Except that if you go to an academic teacher of the Sefer Yetzirah, he is not teaching that aspect. He's teaching the simple understanding of what the words say, instead of recognizing, as my teacher taught me, my teacher and his teacher before him, and the lineage goes back they trace that lineage back a number of generations. He was explaining that these letter meditations and unifications literally change the spiritual effect. And by changing the spiritual effect, they change the physical effect. So what is magic and what is sorcery and what is witchcraft? In our modern generation, we can look up the definitions on Wikipedia or in a dictionary. But their meaning in this pasuk is going to be very different. The meaning in this pasuk is utilizing the tools of Abraham, as an example, the tools of spirituality to manipulate the physical world in different ways. So I hope that answered your question, even though I know it didn't give you the answer you were looking for.
No, it did. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Can I just ask why is it a picture specifically? What's the relationship?
Miriam, you broke up, so please say it again.
Why was it a fig tree? What is it about a fig tree? What's that quality or?
Oh, it's not the fig tree, it's the fig leaves.
Fig leaf, yeah. Can you tell us anything more about that?
This is coming from the verses in Genesis that describe that once they, Adam and Eve, had eaten from the tree of knowledge, good and evil, that they knew they were naked. And so God created fig leaves for them. What is fig leaves? What is it's clothing. What is clothing? Clothing is a covering. What is a klipah? The word for the negative system in Kabbalah is klipah, and it translates as shells. Essentially, light feeds everything. If you have the vessel for light, to reveal that light means it has become inner light. It has moved into your body. But if it's too strong for your body, then it becomes a shell. It surrounds your body to gather all of the energy that it can to feed itself for itself alone. It doesn't allow anybody else to receive any energy from what it's surrounding, from the light sparks that it's surrounding. This is a klipah. And this is what fig leaves represent in this pasuk, and it's what fig leaves represent on us because it represents clothing. And why do we wear clothing? Well, some people will tell you wear clothing because it's cold outside, so you want to be warm. But if you dig into that statement, if you unpack that statement in the vernacular of the rabbis, the modern rabbis, if you unpack that statement, what you're saying is that the energy, because cold means a lack of energy. So are you using something positive to fulfill that energy? No, you're not. You wear clothing, according to the Kabbalah, you wear clothing because you first must conceal in order to later reveal. And that's a spiritual law, that nothing can be revealed until it is first concealed. Because in the endless world, everything is revealed. There's no unconscious, there's no conscious difference in this endless world. Everything is there. And everything is accessible by everything else, because it's all unified. But we live in this physical world, and we look around, we get dressed in the morning. We go to bed, we put covers over ourselves. Why? All of these things are klipot in one sense or another. Now, in Kabbalah, when you say klipot, the plural of klipah, you're talking about the negative system. But a klipah on an orange is the orange rind, and it protects the fruit, so it serves a positive purpose. We don't call, well, in Hebrew they call the orange rind klipah. But that's modern Hebrew. I don't know what the ancients called it, what the biblical word is for.
It was golden apple, but I don't remember the Hebrew either, but it meant golden apple. So.
Okay. What klipah meant, golden apple?
No, the orange.
Oh, okay. That was what you called an orange, but I'm asking a specific, what is the rind of the orange called? Because the golden apple, the orange, the meat of the orange, that is a fruit that it represents fulfillment. It's sweet, it's juicy, it's tasty, it's a wonderful pleasure.
I'm going to have to hang up. I'll try to finish with the recording. Thank you.
Thank
Bye-bye,
you.
Y'all.
So does anyone else have any questions? Well, I'll go on to verse 381. Why won't me mitztafe legabe noach peinun hachmatan liamre dila yakil dina dialma liashra alayhu dihainun avde achmeta ledach yayo The calling nun mare, the dina ume enosh, shariu kaho, the ishtadlu, the ile yain, achmetan hahidiktiv, as huchal likro, the shame hashem. The people defied Noah with this wisdom when he warned them of the impending flood. They said that no punishment could ever be executed upon them because they could avoid, by use of this knowledge, any execution of judgment. From the time of Enosh onward, everyone began practicing these skills. Thus it was written, then men began... The Hebrew word is hukal, to call on Hashem by name. The word hukal means that they made a profane, the Hebrew word chulin or chulin, use of the name of Hashem through the witchcraft that they employed. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Hanoch.
Yes, Hanoch.
Is that referring to the 72 names or just Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh or just the different combinations of all the Hebrew letters?
Yes.
And more, correct?
Every letter in the Torah consists of a name of Hashem. Every letter in the Torah, every word in the Torah, every verse in the Torah, and all of the Torah, all 600,000 letters, is the complete name of Hashem. That's what it means when we say that Anochi means... Is God saying to us, I write my soul to you?
Hello, this is Malcolm.
Thank you.
So, profaning the name of God, is that what they were doing? Just mixing the letters and creating a different name? Is that what profane was in that time?
Well, what do you think profane is in this time?
Well, it's the same. It's the same. True. But is that what they were doing? They were mixing the letters or switching the letters or?
They were permutating the letters. They were parsing the letters and the words. They were... substituting the letters based on the rules of gematria and letter substitution. They were substituting words based on gematria and all 10 levels of gematria. They were manipulating the spiritual laws to change the physical effect. That is the And if the consciousness of the person doing that is a desire to receive for oneself alone, that's the meaning of the word Hulin, or Hilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name, the profaning God's name. Anytime you say God's name with a consciousness of selfishness, each time you pray with a consciousness of selfishness, you are profaning God's name. But we do not have to have the concern in this generation, because we have fallen so far spiritually that our certainty of the desire to receive that we have is so small relative to what it takes to manipulate the spiritual systems, that it's not a concern. That's the protection that's built into the world in our generation, and that's why the Zohar can be taught in our generation. Because we can't manipulate the spiritual system for a negative desire.
Because that's where we are in this generation. Because we've fallen so low, right?
Correct. The metaphorical example I use is to think of Alexander the Great. He had a tremendous motivation. He wanted to conquer the world. That literally was his desire, to conquer the world. Do you know anybody, even Donald Trump, does he want to conquer the world? No, he wants something less than that. Now, maybe the North Korean leader wants to conquer the world, but he also, he limits that to just, controlling all of the people who live in his country. But again, this is not a great desire to receive, is to control the universe. And anything less, and especially in this generation, we have no great desire. If you look at a child, a two-year-old, a toddler, what is their desire to receive? They want to be fed. The baby, before they're a toddler, they want to be fed, they want to be kept dry and clean, they want to be loved. But by the time they're a toddler, what is their desire to receive? It's grown to be an important child in the sandbox. Maybe that's not until they're four. I'm not a child psychologist. But as a two-year-old, what is their desire to receive? And then if you look at a child as a teenager, their desire to receive is larger. Using a term that doesn't make any sense spiritually, what does larger mean in the frame of spirituality? But you understand the intent of the word that I'm using.
Yes.
And then as an adult, what's the desire of an adult relative to the desire of a teenager? And ultimately, what is the desire to receive? It grows. It expands. Because that desire to receive is a creation from Hashem for the purpose of revealing the light of Hashem. That's why Hashem created man. That's why Hashem created the universe, every atom. It has a desire to receive the light of Hashem to the extent and the capacity of that vessel. And all of humanity, all of the consciousness of all spirit or physical entities represents the totality of Hashem's light. So So the light that I desire is different than the light that another person desires. The totality of all of us is the capacity to reveal the whole light of God. And God grows. He doesn't change, but his essence is to expand. His essence is to become more, larger. That's why the universe appears to us that it's expanding. God grows in that sense, which means that we have to grow. And God pushes us, motivates us to grow. And that's the meaning of spiritual growth. It's the meaning of how our unconscious becomes revealed as part of our consciousness until there is no longer an unconsciousness. And then everything is revealed, and that's the endless world. So have I made everything absolutely complex for you or simple?
It's always complex, but you bring us through to where you simplify things for us.
But everything I teach is very easy. It's just not easy to do.
Well, we're growing spiritually, so, you know, at times, yes, it is complex, and then you step back from it and think about it, and you actually go out and view the world in different eyes, and you come to a better understanding.
Baruch Hashem. So you all have a beautiful evening. We're out of time. And we'll pick up tomorrow where we left off here at 4:30. Our class is tonight at 7 o'clock. We'll have an essay by Rabbi Ashlag. And at 8:30, we'll count the Omer. And we will duplicate that. 4:30, the mini Zohar. And 7 o'clock, we'll do a class in the Tikkuni Zohar. And at 8:30 tomorrow, we will count the Omer. Yes. Yes.
Don't you have a class during the day that started Sunday? Different class?
Yes, it started Sunday. It started Sunday. It was 3 p.m. West Coast time, and the recording is on the recordings link. It starts at 3 p.m. Sunday. On Sunday, we have three classes also. Now, one is at 10:30, one is at 3 o'clock, and one is at 8:30 where we count the Omer.
Okay, thank you.
But at this point, every day of the week, there are now three classes as long as we're in the Omer, and then it will go back to its normal pattern of two classes a night.
Okay.
And the only times that are different are Saturday and Sunday. The other days are always 4:30 and 7. And now during the Omer, 8:30 as well. And I remind you, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock class is our Rosh Chodesh connection. So that's always an important thing to do each month. So I wish you all a good week, Shavua Tov. And since we're almost on Rosh Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh Tov. And Shalom to all.
Shalom.
Thanks. Shalom. Thank you.
All right.